All right. Welcome to the Presidio Bitcoin Jam. How are you guys doing?
Great. How are you doing?
Good. Must be Friday because we're here again live streaming.
We're here at the Presidio. Actually, no, we're not. But we're still Presidio Jam.
The brand carries forward.
The brand carries.
I've literally been traveling for 12 hours just to make this show.
Wow.
And I just got home. I woke up at 3 a.m. Eastern time.
Oof.
Wow.
In rural Georgia.
Mm.
So midnight. Hot. Midnight California time.
Was that for Bitcoin related business or was that family stuff?
Just a vacation to Georgia.
You don't have to answer.
Actually, I've never been to Northern Georgia. It's really beautiful there. It's just south of Chattanooga.
All right.
Yeah.
Stayed at the Cloudland Resort. Recommended. But no, the plan was to get to Atlanta, fly out at 7 a.m., get back to SFO in time to make the studio so we could record in person, right? And then number one problem is we learned that the entire building's power is out today, right? That's why none of us are at the studio. And then secondly, despite making it to the airport in plenty of time, one of the flight attendants decided not to show up to work today.
Too much fun. Too much fun in Atlanta.
Too much fun in Atlanta. So that means the flight can't take off. So fortunately, they at least found another flight attendant. But it did delay the flight. And I just got home right in time for the show.
Straight on the show.
So who hosted Nick Bhatia yesterday? Because I saw that he was in attendance at Presidio Bitcoin. None of us were there.
Fortunately, we have great people, and I'm not the only one that has to be running the show. I think Alex hosted Nick.
Yeah. Oh, cool. And how was it?
I saw a few folks sharing things from it. It sounded like it was really, really interesting. I wanted to go, but sadly, I've also been a little up and down this week since I saw you guys last time. You know, I made that quick trip to Mexico. Last Friday at our show, things were totally chill. And then afterwards, I think I had the 72-hour delay, Mexican stomach bug. And so it's been coming on and off in waves, finally feeling good now. But yeah, yesterday I was like all stoked to go in the office and go there, but it did not cooperate. But from what I heard, it was a hit. I mean, it sounds like people love meeting him. And he's definitely one of the thinkers that has influenced, I think, most of my thought on the idea of the Lightning Network reference rate of return, the idea that routing can become something like a yield-free rate of return. So yeah, I'm sad I missed him.
I'm also bummed I missed, but I did tune in actually on the live stream for a little bit. So
how was it?
It was nice. I mean, it was kind of cool. I'm usually there, right? So it was fun to play
the
role.
Live stream the whole session?
Yeah, I think so.
So you can find it on Presidio Bitcoin.
It was, I tuned in maybe 50 minutes in. So it was during a Q&A. Yeah.
Did he drop any new insights or have any comments about for example, the square 10% routing and if that sort of validates his thesis or was he going in a different direction?
I think we'll have to ask that. Someone who was there the whole time. I didn't hear it in my 3-minute window.
Maybe if a listener here today, if we have an Alex or someone, maybe they can tell us.
Yeah, somebody can chime in. Go ahead.
But yeah, David, I didn't answer your question. I was in Georgia for business, not for pleasure. And I think it's going to be one of the topics for us to talk about today. And that would be we can talk about Georgia. We can also talk about, when we're done talking about Georgia, we can talk about the proto launch as well.
Right. So that was a big deal. I'm excited to hear from you guys because I saw it all over Twitter and people were talking about it, but I haven't dug in. I wasn't part of the live session or anything. So I'd love to hear kind of what that's all about. I've got some of the minor bits of background that, you know, kind of what it was intending to be, but I didn't catch
the
much
minor
of it.
Bits, you say?
I heard little odds and ends of pieces of what Proto was all about. And I think there's even a Proto chip at Presidio Bitcoin, right? Along the in the kind of display case, right?
There is. There's one ASIC in the Presidio Bitcoin. I'll give a summary. And I think Max, you probably checked it out some too. So I'm super curious to hear your take as well. And then you guys might have some questions, but this has been a long time coming. This project started 4.5 years ago at Block. And really the genesis there, like why did Block get into mining? Block started doing a lot more analysis of like the energy consumption of mining. I mean, the actual real genesis is that Block needed to do like a carbon report for shareholders. And Max kind of knows this because he was part of this early Genesis project. So there's internal folks who didn't know anything about Bitcoin mining, needed to understand what's the carbon footprint of the company. And there's like already a playbook for everything but Bitcoin that any corporation can use. So that was pretty straightforward. But for Bitcoin, it's really hard to measure. There's different accounting methods. So they asked me to help out with that. So I helped with that. And I already understood mining, I thought, quite well at that point. But it turned out I didn't. I certainly had passed the 101 course, but I learned that I needed to take the graduate level courses. So it just, I went down the mining rabbit hole much deeper. And instead of coming away with like fears of ruining the environment, I came away with seeing, oh, you can make a lot of money in mining. And certainly,
but those aren't always exclusive.
Well,
we may destroy the environment, but we can also make a lot of money.
The environment as well, but I don't
my guess is you're not swayed by just the opportunity to make money. There's more to it than just that, I would guess.
Well, number one, you can make a lot of money, especially if you sell picks and shovels. And in this case, ASIC chips and rigs. And then, secondly, another thing that was happening, this is during the bull market of 2020, 2021. And usually with a bull market comes concerns over energy usage and environmental impact. So that's where, I mean, Max and I already known each other for, I don't know, 3 years or 3 or 4 years, but we roped Max into helping us out writing a paper. And that was, you probably remember the exact title, but like a clean and abundant energy world, something like that.
Bitcoin is key to a clean and abundant energy future.
Thank you. So anyway, there's just a lot more mental energy expended on Bitcoin mining. And it is a combination of both, oh, great business opportunity. Secondly, a weakness in Bitcoin's decentralization theme is that there's like sort of one game in town for chips, and that's Bitmain. If you expand it a little bit, is Bitmain and MicroBT, but two Chinese companies. So there's a big centralizing factor that's a risk and concern for Bitcoin. Even if those two companies are good actors, they're both Chinese. So like the Chinese government could just like cut them off, or the United States adds crazy tariffs or whatever. I mean, all these geopolitical events. So that's a risk to Bitcoin. And then third, like, even more than before, I was convinced that it's not some environmental disaster. Like I felt like it was like, I felt like ethical proceeding to work in Bitcoin and promote Bitcoin and do, you know, use proof of work. So the company agreed and started working this project. It's been a long haul. It's 4.5 years later. But the great news is finally had a launch event this week. I thought it went really, really well. So proud of all the people on that team that work on it. Just so listeners know, I run Spiral. I work on open source stuff. So like there's an entire commercial team at Block that did all the hard effort to build this and make it a reality. So it was announced. I think, you know, the company's been very open and transparent about the project from the beginning. So I think people already knew that, oh, we're going to design our own chip. Block is going to open source the software, the firmware, as much of the hardware designs as possible. That's sort of already been known. And there's even Block announced a customer earlier this year, Core Scientific. And that's actually, you know, why was I in rural Georgia? Well, the event was hosted at a Core Scientific Bitcoin mining industrial scale site. So that's why we were there. But what was revealed that was new, number one, is a rig, not just a chip, but it was the first reveal of the Block's Proto's rig, and they called it Rig. So it's very, very succinct name. They also announced their software for fleet management, and it's called Fleet, also very succinct name. So they announced Rig and Fleet. Rig is a novel design, like an industrial design and mechanical engineering design. They're able to fit 50% more mining hash rate in the same like linear footage of what a standard rack is. So that's novel. They made it hot swappable. So it's way easier to repair. And perhaps even more importantly than that, current miners, you have to, if one part goes bad, like if a power supply fails or a fan fails, you typically have to like replace, or certainly if a chip or hash board fails, you have to replace the entire unit and like, you know, e-cycle the whole thing. But with the new rig design, you can just take out one of the 9 hash boards and replace, hot swap and replace it. If a fan goes bad, you just replace the fan. And they've designed it so you can do that replacement and that repair work very, very quickly. So there's a lot of wins, I think, with the industrial design, mechanical design. And then the chip itself, they announced some performance metrics, which they had not done previously. And it's super exciting to see that it's like very competitive with the best of the best. Bitmain's always been the best on this particular measure. The like joules per terahash, like how much performance do you get for every watt of energy? And there, you know, there's never been anyone really threatening Bitmain on that metric for the past 10 plus years. And Proto's performance that they announced is definitely in the ballpark of the best performing Bitmain chip. And I think that bodes well for the future as well. And one interesting thing about the rig design too, if a new chip and hashboard does come out, say 6, 12, 18 months later, you don't have to replace your entire thing. You just replace the hashboard, put it in the new hashboard, and it's a much more economical upgrade. So that's the hardware. I probably forgot a few things. You guys can ask questions. But then on the fleet management software, I think that's really interesting too. The mining industry's known for having really low quality software. Third party software is pretty low quality. Often it's done in house, and then you get a mishmash of stuff. And the fleet management software from Proto looks professional. Basically, both the hardware and the software looks like it's designed from people who built Square and Cash App. And it's because guess what? It's because literally people that have been working at the company for 5, 8, 10 years that have worked on Square for a long time, a lot of them did work on Proto. And I think it showed through in yesterday's reveal.
And did you say that Fleet is fully open source?
It's fully open source. It also works on other equipment. So it works with Bitmain.
Mm-hmm.
So like it. Yeah. So, I mean, this is kind of interesting, right? If you're a miner and you've got like tens of thousands of Bitmain machines, if you like the Fleet software, you can just use it for free. You don't even have to buy Proto equipment. So you don't even have to have a customer relationship with Proto. You just download the Fleet software, and there's a good chance that's a better experience to manage your fleet. And then if you do have equipment, from a variety of vendors, you're able to really nicely compare the performance of each as well.
Yeah. Now, my understanding on the rig is like traditionally the rig and chip are all bundled, and that they might have a typical lifespan of like 3 years or so, and that some of the unbundling here is that there's a deeper investment in the rig, so it's designed to maybe last for 10 years or more. Is that like a major point of why people should be caring about this configuration?
Yeah, and there's really two aspects to that point. One is that Block will sell the chip alone, and that's not done by Bitmain or the other major vendors. Now, existing industrial miners, the way they operate today, that might not be of interest to them. They just want to buy rigs and deploy them as cheaply and quickly as possible. But there's definitely mining companies and potentially startups too that have an idea for a new type of application, a new industrial design, a new electrical design, new mechanical design, in which they don't want to just take Proto's rig and form factor or someone else's and deploy that. So they can just buy the chip and do their own design. So that's one aspect. But then I think more to what you're pointing to is that with Proto's rig, yeah, it's a very different framing and positioning to miners. Any miner that's really playing the long game, they intend to be around for more than 3 years. It's a pretty interesting value proposition to buy this equipment that is intended to last 10 plus years. And then you can just naturally upgrade the ASICs as they, there's an expectation that ASICs are going to keep improving rapidly. But that's all you have to upgrade. Like the fans, the power supplies, all the other components, they're not going to need to be upgraded over the next 10 years.
Do we have a sense of what the kind of typical CapEx cost is on rig versus chip? You know, it gets bundled, I think, when you buy it from Bitmain. But is the rig like 20% of the overall cost and the chip is 80%? Or is it like, do we have much sense of what that is? Because that might also help us build an intuition around why it's important for the rig to last so long.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a specific number, but I think your guess there is probably roughly right. I mean, it's definitely true. The ASIC chips are the highest cost component. A rig typically has, in general, a rig typically has like 300 ASICs or 400 ASICs in a rig. Proto's rig might have even more because there's more hash power per linear foot. There's hundreds and hundreds of these chips. So I think the 80-20 ratio is like a ballpark correct. Saving, not having to replace the 20% cost is a win. Yeah. I mean, is a big win, right? I mean, mining is a game of small margins. Or it certainly is going to wind up that way. So a 20% win over some period of time is significant. Also, you typically have to pay money to get rid of this equipment. So you don't want to have to get rid of this equipment. You don't want to be contributing waste to the world and have to pay that cost. So there's a win there as well.
Right.
I really like the analogy actually Keon made on Stack News of comparing this to Framework Computer. Are you guys familiar with that company?
I haven't seen it, no.
Very cool company. I forget if they spun out of, maybe it was Meta or... although I guess more of an Apple type approach, but or an Apple type aesthetic with a more modular approach. But they basically allow you, it's a privacy focused computer, but you can basically pop in and out whatever you want. So if you want to upgrade your RAM, you can constantly do that. I imagine that's also a possibility. I don't know exactly how this would work, but you know, if someone maybe started with less CapEx from day one, but maybe in the future they're doing really well and they want to upgrade and add a bunch more chips, this probably makes it a lot easier to add future chips to the rig or more rigs to the area. And also probably better plan like the actual physical space that you're building in. If you know these are the rigs that are going to be there for 10 years or something like that. So I like that modularity. And I mean, it also fits really well with the whole Bitcoin open source transparent ethos, the plug and play.
Yeah, I like the modularity a lot. I wonder do we have an intuition that we can start building around how that modularity will impact the market? So we could say, certainly, you can swap things out, you probably operate more efficiently, but I would guess there's also a play that's going to enable maybe a new type of miner or a new type of kind of competition in mining to emerge. And, maybe somebody wants to compete very deeply at one layer and sort of modularize commoditize the complement or work sort of above or below them. And I wonder my understanding is Bitmain is extremely full stack, not only the rig and the chip, but sometimes financing and which pool you have to be a part of. And there's all kinds of like other requirements that kind of strengthen their kind of sort of defend their position. And I think this being everything open source and all modular sort of doesn't have that. But I wonder what else around like financing or kind of the modularity might enable a very new type of competitor, or how much is this existing miners are going to get much more efficient?
Well, to address one point, I think it's true that Bitmain, you know, has Ant Pool and has most portions of a full stack, but they don't require it. Their Foundry has 30% hash rate or whatever, and there's lots of Bitmain machines on Foundry. Block starting with a few of those components, there's obviously potential for more. I mean, Block has been a lending business for a long time. So that would potentially be a natural fit in the future. Potentially running like a mining pool, and there's lots of different angles there.
I mean, what I get most excited about is the ability for entrepreneurs, and maybe not with this first gen, but eventually to experiment with just new form factors for mining. So the first one that comes to mind for me that I would love to see is, you know, if you think in the long run where mining is going, you know, perhaps the big HPC AI compute takes like the really, really, really big scale farms. That's where that ends up. But mining, you know, becomes more and more of the bottom feeder at the edges of things. And so one area I fully expect to see this is, you know, distributed solar. Within the inverter of a solar panel, someone is going to put an ASIC once it's cheap enough to do that. Maybe it's, you know, the older ones first. And that's going to be a phenomenal new form factor for mining. When people are mining, they don't even think about it. It's just when I get solar installed in my house, which now in California is like a requirement, I think, for new houses. There's just a Bitcoin miner in there. And I just know that there's this little chip that has the option, or I don't even know about. There's some software, maybe Square writes it, or Tesla, or whatever startup ends up bringing this to market. And I just know my bills are lower. I just happen to make a little extra money every month. Those are the kinds of things that the modularity gets me most excited about.
Yep. And the open, I mean, so David, you listed a bunch of things Bitmain does. So sure, Proto could copy all those and it might make sense. But the open platform selling the chips, I think that's one thing that would be very new here, right? Opening up a whole ecosystem of new mining applications that weren't really possible or practical before.
Did we get any sense, Steve, in the announcement on the actual cost? Like if someone wanted to start running these numbers and looking at, you know, the solar inverter model to get a sense of it, is it economical today or not?
You can contact sales to learn more. I think, that is the literal answer.
Yeah.
I think, because I think the initial customers, I mean, this product is for industrial mining, right? And that's a short list of customers. So I'm pretty sure the team and the sales team at Proto are already in touch with all these potential customers, talking to them. My take on this is the marketing of Rig is it's not really retail. And then as far as customers who do buy it, it really depends on how they customize it. There's many different configurations. And also with mining chips in general, you can tune them different ways. The joules per terahash number is always the one that gets the limelight and is the one that's sort of marketed heavily. And it's an important metric, but so is like the area efficiency, or basically like dollars, terahash per dollars, or either, you know, dollars per terahash. And that matters as well. And a bunch of other factors. So you can tune the chip to optimize for one or the other. There's trade-offs there. So different applications are going to care more about energy efficiency than others.
Yeah, I also have a ton of ideas that are flooding in right now. The first is we should 100% do a Proto hack day at Presidio Bitcoin. Or even if it's not Proto, I guess the fleet, the open source software, ideally I'd love to see, because I guess what I was getting at is not just with the commercial users, but like, can we see a developer, some DIY tinker that gets the first version of the chip with a solar inverter just to prove it's possible. But I mean, I guess if we already have access to the software, we could have an open source hack day or something and see all kinds of weird and crazy examples. And who knows, maybe some of those ideas are really good.
But definitely on both, but like the fleet software, I think that would come first. And even at the hackathon we held at Presidio Bitcoin in May, one of the participants had a hackathon project which created mining.
Oh, that's right.
Mining management software, right? And added like AI to it and stuff, which is pretty cool. And actually part of the fleet announcement incorporated AI in the management in fleet's UI. That might have been inspired by the hackathon project, because the person who
it
did
always
it,
comes back to Presidio Bitcoin.
No, I mean, actually, it did, because the person who had that project was a Block employee, so it was shared internally. Yesterday, right after the announcement, I had several people pinging me, excited to contribute to the open source fleet management software. Like several were frustrated that they didn't know this already, because they've been working with several other developers the past 3 or 4 months on fleet management software components. Mm. So I think there's going to be a lot of interest in contributing to that and improving it. And as an open source project, and again, and it's not tied to the proto hardware, I think there'll be good community interest there. So that would make for a great hackathon. And even without availability of the hardware, we could just have Bitmain hardware.
To
test it out.
And like, there's a comment in chat that says, "Can I use Proto Fleet to control a fleet of BitXs?" Lol.
Yeah,
but I think that's actually what the demo of the hackathon showed.
Exactly. The person commenting, "Come to our hackathon that we're going to have." Because that's exactly the kind of project that I believe right now Fleet only supports Rig and Bitmain, and I think it's like more to come. But this that's a perfect hackathon project where someone could add support for BitX to Fleet software.
I love it, and it's also super in line with our ideas on making Presidio Bitcoin more DIY. You know, if we're really going to get serious about putting in our own solar and storage and our own fleet of miners, then like we should absolutely let our wizards be creating all kinds of fancy products on top. The other thing that comes to mind when you're talking about the financing piece that you brought up, DK, I don't know, one of you guys shared, QBaby was on it again, you know, talking about how obviously Block, you've got a history of doing this with both consumers and businesses. The closer you are to them, the better you can make lending decisions. Of course, you're into that mining. No inside info. Steve, you don't even have to blink twice. That just seems like so obvious and such a good and a very, very obvious like, business model. There it is. You saw it here first, folks. But as I started thinking about all the places this could go, I mean, you know, I don't know if we've announced it on the show, but we're, you know, obviously going to be hosting an energy event at Presidio Bitcoin coming up soon as well. And what this gets me thinking about is, you know, for the longest time, I've been interested in basically how you can create effectively new and open markets for energy, new and open grids. That's a much, much longer conversation. But even the marketplaces, you know, my sort of dream product or dream software I've wanted for, you know, many, many years is, I have an Electron. What do I do with it? Do I use it? Do I sell it? Do I store it? Do I mine it? And this is a really interesting kind of like sort of beachhead to start with here. There's a couple of companies that have tried to create like open source energy management software and open source utility software. And maybe some of that stuff could work, but for a variety of reasons, I think it ends up getting pretty siloed. But this is interesting because this could actually get broad adoption on the Bitcoin mining side first. And then, you know, then you could start thinking, well, I'm already mining whatever all these fleets with it. Now I could start to add other functionality to it. Like, okay, you know, in real time, I'm also, you know, if I'm an operator, a large operator, you know, should I route this Electron towards mining in my fleet, or should I route it towards my AI compute? Well, I have to make that decision in real time. And I also think that with the Bitcoin piece, this one of the biggest opportunities I can't stop thinking about. I don't know exactly how this is going to materialize, but is to basically recreate all energy markets and all energy products, like all the derivatives and stuff that are basically traded down in Houston, Bitcoin backed, and basically create like a whole new marketplace for those contracts and futures and whatnot. And this could be a really interesting starting point to start playing with that. yeah, I'll have a lot more ideas to share on that. But I think this could lead to something much, much, much bigger.
Let's keep jamming on that. I do like the idea of a mini hackathon or something around this at Presidio Bitcoin, or maybe a global event or something like that.
Yeah.
Well, a couple of things. I definitely want to talk about Stratum V2 a little bit, but there's a comment here from William. I recall the mining hardware market was estimated at $20 billion a year in a previous jam. Is that still the opportunity size? We probably talked about that. I don't recall.
I think
that,
this is like the security budget, right?
But, yeah.
So might be referring to the security budget.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so one thing we can calculate, we can look at any point in time, how much revenue have miners generated over some period of time, right? And I haven't even looked at this year. There's certainly been a year where it's been on the order of $20 billion. Fees are very low right now. Bitcoin having occurred a little over a year ago, but the Bitcoin price is very high right now. So since we're not in the studio and I'm on my laptop at home, I can look it up. I can look it up. That's the advantage of this. So let's see.
A go-to site, Steve, that you use for tracking these revenue metrics?
I still use fork.lol, which is from SegWitWars. but it breaks things down nicely. Like the past week, the average block reward Coinbase in fees, $376,000, right? So we can take that times 144 in a day, times 52 weeks, divide that by 365 days, not 52 weeks. And I get $20 billion.
Oh, wow.
All right.
So I don't know what the cumulative is for this year, but taking the past week's revenue generated, annualizing that, it's $20 billion. Now, that is not the market for equipment, though. That's the total revenue. And then, you know, how does that break down? Well, there's profit margin. There's some cost for like security and operations and things like that. There's electricity and there's CapEx. And there's financing costs. So there's a bunch of components there. At a really high level, it kind of shakes out to like the two dominant ones are energy and equipment. You can kind of see the equipment market size is $5 to $10 billion in a year. There's a lot of uncertainty in the market too, right? We don't know what the revenue is going to be next year. We don't know what the price is going to be. We don't know what transaction fees are going to, are they going to like actually come along, et cetera. But think on the order of like $5 to $10 billion market. I think analysts project something lower than that. I don't quite get that, but I think they project like $2 to $4 billion. My live estimate right now would be more on the order of like probably $5 to $7 billion.
In the long run, do you expect that, because we talked about the security budget stuff, do you expect that that's kind of in the range of healthy and stable, or is there some reason to believe that that might grow substantially from 5 to 10 billion to 50 billion or more?
It could go either direction, but for people who have been listening to our show the last few weeks, it can go way, way down, right? Mm-hmm. Now, what's the clear, what's going to make it go up? Two things: the price of Bitcoin and transaction fee, demand for transactions and block space. What we talked about the last few weeks is concerns about the latter, and that's very important long term. Now, the price of Bitcoin, that's one where probably our audience and ourselves are quite bullish on over the next decade or so. So if the price does appreciate to $500,000 or $1 million for Bitcoin, obviously that directly impacts minor revenue security budget and the size of the market for this equipment. Another thing that's certain, we know the schedule of the halvings. You know, every halving, half as much Bitcoin is minted each year. So take whatever the price is times, you know, those number of Bitcoin, but then cut it in half. So it just literally halves the market for the security budget, for the equipment, et cetera, especially when that's true when transaction revenue is essentially zero. But yeah, the reason to be bullish that this market will remain that large or even grow much more is if the price of Bitcoin moons. A reason to be concerned medium to long term is that people actually don't use Bitcoin transactions in the Bitcoin network. And then it will go, it'll decline to potentially a much smaller market than even today. And but that would also, you know, sort of be the end of Bitcoin as well.
Cool. Can we talk a bit about the Stratum V2? I assume that some of what we can do with a open modular system is that people could sort of contribute in different ways. I know Stratum V2 is a mining pool protocol, if I understand right, was designed to try to encourage, I'd say, like some more decentralization in mining. And so far, maybe it hasn't gotten broad adoption. So would we expect that Fleet would be a good way for it to get broader adoption, or is it another part of the modularity?
It certainly helps. I mean, the joke on the proto team with me is that, like, from a proto perspective, this is like one little tiny feature. And it's the one that I talk about all the time. And it's just because, like, my role in Spiral and working on broader open source Bitcoin is often I'm advocating for improvements to protocols. And certainly one thing I've learned very deeply now is improvements to protocols takes a long, long, long time to occur, especially in something decentralized. And, you know, anyone who's followed like internet protocols or protocols that need to be adopted by like thousands of companies knows how long it can take. And that's certainly the case. Certainly the case with Bitcoin. So Stratum V2, Spiral and many, many other companies have been working on it, speccing out, writing the code, testing it. There are several companies in the space that are actively developing towards launch of Stratum V2. And I'm actually feeling really good momentum now. A lot of them are not public information yet. So I'm happy that Proto now publicly announced that the rig will support Stratum V2. So I think it definitely helps. It'll help adoption. Because we have to convince miners need to be convinced to adopt it, pools need to, even the Bitcoin Core project has to be convinced to adopt it. Because right now, if you want to run Stratum V2, if you're a miner or a pool, you have to fork Bitcoin Core and use a patch that's been created by the Stratum V2 project. And we, of course, want that integrated into Bitcoin Core so you can just use stock Bitcoin Core. But like the Bitcoin Core devs is like, you know, their stance is like, we've heard about this for years. Is it actually getting adoption? So seeing Proto announce this formally and when others will be announced soon, I think that, you know, that creates great momentum and will help.
Cool. Is there any disruptive opportunity? I would guess with just being able to swap in and out, you know, the chips real time creates different operational needs within an existing industrial miner. Just like they have to retool their workflows and workforce to some extent to take advantage of these new opportunities. And so I'm wondering, are they all mostly like leaning into those types of things, or are they more like a little bit wait and see, or is going to take some time to adopt these things? Does everybody consider it a clear win, or are there questions sort of that people have outstanding? And then kind of a follow-up is, if there are questions, are there newer upstarts that are sort of taking more aggressive stance on this?
Can you say, sorry, I was reading Austin's question. Oh. Can you repeat, like, just the first part of your question?
Yeah, just wondering, like, because there's enough operational differences and challenges that, you know, being able to swap things in and out quickly, you have to sort of maybe retrain your workforce or decide new workflows that you're going to implement. So if you're an already at scale industrial miner, you know really well how to do this with the old systems, maybe with like the ant miners or the Bitmain stuff, but maybe there's a bunch of new operational stuff to learn to make it work with kind of rig and proto.
So the design of rig took into account dozens of miners' feedback. And I think, and we saw yesterday, I mean, both from the miners that were in the audience that I spoke with firsthand, and then also social media reaction, they're very happy with the design of rig because it addressed like their top, you know, 10 or 20 concerns and points of feedback. So I don't think that's going to be, basically it's a shit show right now. So mm-hmm. they're going to get rid of the shit show in terms of operations and repairability and all that stuff. So is it a new process? Yes. It's eliminating 95% of the time and energy and effort, as opposed to like replacing something with something that's just as much effort that's different. It's not really right. like that.
So is it fair to say it's kind of a no-brainer that as the upgrade cycle comes that every one of these industrial miners would choose this new system? Or do you think there's going to be holdbacks or questions that they would have that they need to answer before they make that transition?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think, you know, from this day forward, 100% of sales are going to immediately go to proto. Yeah. So if I'm a miner, it's like, well, this is the new guy on the block. Like, so can I trust it? I mean, the marketing and sales pitch sounds good. Let me get some units and test them out. I do think it's very attractive if you're a miner to allocate a small percentage of your new purchases to a new vendor, as long as that new vendor meets some minimum bar, which, my opinion, I think Proto does. I mean, Proto is definitely competitive, because even if you allocate 10% of your new purchases to a new vendor, you are, especially when you're dealing with a monopoly or duopoly, it gives you a lot better negotiating power. I mean, mm-hmm. for the past decade, like Bitmain's sort of the only game in town. So they get to call all the shots, right? But if you show that you're willing to put money towards another vendor, that definitely shifts the power back to miners. So mm-hmm. for that reason alone, I think at least a small allocation makes tremendous sense. And then there's going to be some miners. There's also many different applications of mining in cold environments, hot environments, different cool. We haven't talked about cooling, but so rig works with air cooling, which is the predominant method today, as well as immersion. And both were demonstrated at the event. It doesn't support hydro. Maybe that comes in the future, but the product announced doesn't support hydro. So, you know, if you're a miner that is the whole new build out is hydro, well, then this product's not for you. You know, so you're not going to use that. But if you're doing air cooling or immersion, you know, then it's a good fit.
And what is immersion? Is that not emerging in water? Immersing in water when
it dipped in liquid.
Oh, it is. Okay. Like, how's it different than hydro? How's that different than hydro?
Well, I don't know what the.
It's not water. I don't know. I don't know what the.
I don't know what. Yeah, I don't know what substance it is for the immersion.
Oh,
but
okay.
But I don't think it's cycled. I mean, it's like it's just dipped in liquid and then it just operates in that environment versus like water flowing through and cooling the system.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Steve, can you maybe help us just think through a little bit back of the envelope what that economic journey would look like? Because, like, to your point, I get that Proto is competitive, but I mean, it's obviously, I think the still top of the line Bitmains are, I don't know what they're like, 12 joules per terahash. Is that right?
12 or 13 compared to 14.1. One thing for the audience, or you guys to understand and the audience to understand, whenever you're comparing those numbers, you really want to make sure you're comparing apples to apples. So what are some of the variables that different vendors can like tweak or massage? One is chip level versus system level. So it's always the case that your joules per terahash metric is better at the chip level than the system level. But once you're at the system level, you have some loss there. So some vendors might say we're at X joules per terahash, but they're talking about one chip, not a system. So, you know, if Bitmain or Proto are quoting a system level, then that's not apples to apples. So that's one thing to be aware of. Two is the operating environment. Like the temperature can greatly impact the performance of the system, and it can impact different systems differently. So anytime someone's quoting a number, you want to know, okay, what was the environment that it was tested in particular temperature? And let's see, what else? Oh, third, like, did they underclock the chip? If you underclock the chip, you're going to get worse, hash per second performance, but a better energy efficiency number. So is it a fair comparison there? So there's a bunch of things to be aware of that make it hard to just like do a Google search and compare these performance numbers. But yeah, I believe and then hydro versus air cooling. Like hydro, you get much better efficiency numbers. So Bitmain's top of the line, like S21 or their, I think, reported S23, if it's hydro, I think it's even as good as like 9 or 10 joules per terahash. But again, that's not apples to apples comparison to an air-cooled system. So I think their air-cooled top-of-the-line systems are on the order of 12.5 to 13 and change joules per terahash.
Yeah. And so just to be clear, though, so let's say even if the current state-of-the-art from Bitmain, and again, like eventually I'm sure people that are actually using these will be able to hopefully publish some of the real numbers around this. But even if it's 10, 20% better on a pure efficiency, apples to apples, whatever that number ends up being, to your point, you know, even if it's a little bit better, you still might say, okay, I'm going to allocate 10% of my fleet to Proto today because, you know, I don't want to be controlled by a total monopoly, or I'm seeing the writing on the wall. I want to go towards an American made chip or whatever it is. And then over time, I guess kind of what you're also saying implicit in this is, you know, related to their conversation, you're actually asking a question with me and DK earlier, why might someone bet with a company like Block in the long run? Well, you might also be betting that they're going to be able to have a faster iteration cycle. And now they've got the modularity. Like, yeah, maybe today I've only got whatever, I'm buying the rig. And does this support Bitmain miners? Can you put them, I guess it doesn't fit in there exactly, but okay, well, whatever. Maybe I start buying more rig than I need, but the plan is I'm making a bet that Block is going to be able to match or surpass Bitmain over the coming whatever year or 2 years. And so I want to make sure that happens so I don't get caught with one supplier completely controlling my hash.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And also, like, comparing joules per terahash in isolation, I mean, that's definitely a comparison one should make, but it's just one of many factors. Because even if there's, some deployments, that metric matters as much as the numbers you can infer from the numbers. Others, it doesn't matter as much. If you're less sensitive to the energy, if you have a low energy cost, you're less sensitive to that number. And then secondly, if you are looking at the life cycle of this, you see how you can save costs in many other ways that can easily be more than the savings from the energy. And then you guys asked about price earlier, which is not disclosed, but whatever that turns out to be, that can be an advantage as well. So there's just lots of factors to the purchasing here. Which ultimately leads to, no, I don't think Proto is going to get 100% market share on day one, but there are many reasons that it's not going to be 0% either. To me, the easiest sales pitch is just like, hey, it's a credible new vendor, allocate something like 10% of new purchases to the new vendor, just so you gain better negotiating power. Also, of course, it allows you to evaluate this new vendor, test it for real. If you like it, then buy more. If a new hashboard or new chip comes out in the future that's even more competitive, is the number one one or whatever, then great. You've got all these rigs you've already purchased. You can just plug in new hashboards. So let's see how it performs.
So I'm going to...
So we've learned in the chat that it's also being cooled in oil, but don't worry. We've been assured it is beef tallow and definitely not sea oil. So thank you for that clarification. I was getting nervous for a minute.
Just like Steak and Shake.
So I know you guys struck out in Vegas, but have you been to a Steak and Shake since?
No.
Definitely.
I don't know, where else would I find a Steak and Shake besides Vegas?
Well, in the middle of Georgia.
In Georgia,
so
okay.
I went to my first Steak and Shake, and apparently Jack grew up with Steak and Shake in St. Louis.
Wow.
I'm a little surprised because like Iowa, there are no Steak and Shakes. I'm from Iowa. There's no Steak and Shakes in Iowa, at least when I grew up.
I think we had them in rural Illinois.
Okay.
Yeah.
We didn't have them in Tennessee.
It was in Missouri and Illinois, but not Iowa, I guess. But in any case, Jack grew up on them. So we swung by Steak and Shake, paid in Bitcoin. It's a beautiful experience.
Nice.
I used Lexi. LDK,
nice.
LDK-based wallet. Lexi worked perfectly.
Great.
Paid for the lunch. And yeah, it was. We bought a jar of beef tallow. I think Miles brought it home to Costa Rica.
Oh, nice.
Anyway, we did the Steak and Shake thing, which is fun.
Cool. I gotta ask this question on behalf of my friend, and I'll share this segment
with
him.
Your friend, ish.
I have a friend who's not involved in mining, but he's excited about getting involved in mining in some way. And I think it's mostly he wants to kind of like find an opportunity to deploy capital to get KYC free Bitcoin. And I
don't think that. Tell us more about this friend.
I said if he figures it out,
he's
interested to hear.
He's very handsome. He loves to run and bike.
Yeah. With the dog. It's great. Yeah.
But he's had all kinds of ideas. Like he said, maybe we should create some sort of collective, and can we, he's always dreaming something up about how to do mining in a new way. And so I sent him the proto thing, and he's like, okay, cool. He's like, I've got, consider me tons of capital, tons of time. Like, how do I take advantage of this? Can I do something here? So I guess my question to you is like, can he do something?
Yeah. I mean, if he wants to write like $100 million check, no problem at all.
To do what? Like, is it just starting yet another miner, or is there something interesting I could suggest to him to investigate?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we've talked about the product that was launched. It's a rig and fleet management software. So he can, if he's a big buyer, he could talk to sales and buy a bunch of equipment.
Would it impact?
I don't know.
I
don't know where you're going with this. There's like third parties that might allow hosting of mining, but I mean that already, Compass Mining and I think Wilson Mining does this, and that already exists. So
I think it depends on what his goal is. If his goal is to figure out how to get clean Bitcoin, then like obviously just set it up off grid. It'd be very interesting if he wants a project to play with to try this sort of solar storage, completely off-grid mining situation. That to me sounds very promising. And if he wants to do something just to like get involved and play with the proto mining, I love this idea of like, now that you have a chip and open source software, where like can you plug the chip into weird places like the inverter or like, I don't know, like the heating that we're seeing people doing now with the heater or whatever the company is called. Those kinds of like new usefulness are really, really interesting to me. And I think proto is the only way to do it.
I'm interested in this idea of like, you touched on it, but didn't quite say it, but I think like depending on what the payback period is, if you were to install a chip in a solar panel, could you actually give solar panels away for free to people? And like,
well,
you
that's get the idea.
The mining?
That's the idea.
Component
it's very similar. Well, either do like that or... It's sold as part of a bigger package. I doubt the numbers are there to make that exactly.
But is it like 18 months or 36 months, you think, or even longer?
I have no idea. I have to look at the numbers on this.
David, to help us answer the question, like, are you asking, does your friend want a prepackaged product and service, or is he an entrepreneur who wants to build a business based around this? Because it's very different answers.
Closer to the latter. Yeah. Closer
to the latter. Like taking like one of Max's crazy ideas and turn it into reality, right?
But I think he doesn't want to just, well, I've told him, don't get involved in just trying to be yet another industrial miner. It's like a brutally competitive industry that's very optimized, right?
But that's why I do, like I said earlier, you know, now that you can buy chips individually, you can come up with whole new form factors and designs, and that can open up totally new avenues. So you're not doing the same thing that everyone else is. Now, obviously, whatever you design and try to apply, it has to be like a good value proposition and tap into it. You're developing a new application, new market, and ultimately it has to be competitive financially within Bitcoin mining. But it would be the case, you know, you can certainly imagine like Max's idea is definitely not done today, right? So it's new.
Yeah.
At least the potential to be differentiated.
Well, I'd be really curious. There's one guy, Ali, who's come to some of our chats, and he's very deep in both mining and solar, and we'll definitely have him for the event as well. He's been trying to pencil this model, like this basically, you could do it as just give away the energy system, the solar panels effectively, and then you monetize it this over the earth. There's like many ways you could finance. Like that's the way solar used to be, where people would essentially just securitize a whole bunch of these, give away for free, and then get the paybacks. Now it then went to loans. Now it's like more of like actual energy sales. But regardless, there's like different financing techniques. But I think this idea of can you move mining to the edge is very interesting. Ali is definitely the farthest along in this. I'd be curious to get his take on Proto. Actually, I didn't even think to ask him because he's someone that, you know, if this made the economics slightly better, maybe he could, you know, push this further. But it definitely has not penciled yet. So to your friend's question, like now the question would be to get this in the field test. Does this make things like giving away free solar? Does this make that pencil? I doubt we're there yet still, but maybe it's a closer step.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to answer, Austin had a question a few minutes ago about why his adoption been slow. And I think he's referring to Stratum V2. And I mean, this could be a long conversation. I'll just answer it in a short way that applies to any of these protocols. But it takes a long time because you need, with protocols, you need, there's network effects with the protocol you're trying to replace. So it's not like who's the first mover? Like if you're the first adopter, you don't have anyone to connect to. So everyone's asking, who else has adopted it? Why should I be first? And when you need like dozens or hundreds of projects, companies, products to adopt something, each has their own roadmap, priorities, and limited resources. Almost always there's way too much work. So you have to get on the priority list for hundreds of different products, and all of them ask, why should I be first? So this takes years and years and years to get any kind of protocol adoption. And I think that's a pattern that's true for any type of protocol.
But I think Austin, or implicit in what he was saying there is, you know, that's true unless it's like a hair on fire problem. And I think what he was asking was it not a hair on fire problem? People were just like stealing hash rate.
Not really, because there's no concrete evidence of stealing hash rate. It definitely can be done. It's definitely real, and that it can be done, and it's been demonstrated. So it's not like a fake problem. It's a real potential threat. It also it could be the case that it has been happening.
We just don't know it,
and we don't know. It's definitely also true that a lot of larger miners have deployed custom solutions to like mitigate the risk.
Yeah.
It's not like hair on fire just because, I mean, obviously if we had evidence, if we have a dashboard that shows 5% of your revenue is being stolen, obviously the miners would immediately prioritize fixing it. And then same with like running your own, you know, creating your own block templates and decentralizing Bitcoin further, you know, miners generally don't care about that. you know, they aren't, miners are typically not on Twitter pounding their chest about decentralization of Bitcoin. They are out in the field, more blue collar worker or accountant type person, you know, counting the coins that are being mined. And that's, they're worried about energy costs and accounting and things like that, not decentralization of Bitcoin.
Austin was saying he thought maybe the stuff would be backward compatible for the network participants to be able to join in. Is it true that it's a total break with the existing? You don't have backward compatibility in these protocols?
It's kind of neither. There is some backwards compatibility in that if you have a miner that is running Stratum V1 firmware, there is part of the open source project that we and others have been working on. There's a translation from Stratum V1 to V2. So you can have existing equipment. You don't need to upgrade the firmware, or it could be the case the chip doesn't even have Stratum V2 firmware. That's fine. You can still be compatible with Stratum V2, but you need Stratum V2 mining pools, and that's where there's adoption has been lagging. There's one startup that supports it right now, called Demand, and it's early days for them, and we'll see how things develop in the coming months for other pools.
Cool. Should we, anything else to say on Proto? I think we spent about an hour on Proto, but we've got two other topics to address. So should we move to another topic?
Move forward, yeah.
Okay, so I think next up is this Google Play Store drama. I saw that Google had announced something about not supporting non-custodial wallets, and then very quickly walked it back. But I don't know all of the details of that. Have you guys followed this one closely?
Fairly closely. A few days ago, Marty Bent tweeted it, I think. And the Rage media had an article covering it. And if you went to Google's or the Play Store's help page, it was pretty clear language that if you have a cryptocurrency wallet, it has to, and then they did a country by country breakdown what the requirements were. And I mean, I looked at the US and Europe, and you know, you had to be like FinCEN, or you basically had to be like a licensed money business. And in Europe, I think you had to, be regulated through the new MiCA, MiCA, I don't know how they say it, but, different regulations, which would eliminate, which would mean like all self-custody wallets would be banned the implication is that they'd be banned from the Play Store. So if that were actually the case, it would be a pretty dramatic event. So a lot of people on Bitcoin, tweeted out concern, were kind of aghast by that. And then Google did respond from some seemingly official Google Twitter account. I'd never heard of it before though, but, saying that it was like a error oversight and they're going to correct the help content. They did update the help content with like a little call out saying it doesn't apply to self-custody wallets. Although then I just tweeted asking, what about like liquid based wallets or eCash based wallets or Spark based wallets?
People probably know what that is.
They probably don't. Yeah. So I mean, I'm certain the Google Play Store,
like, okay, nerd,
people don't have an appreciation for the spectrum of trust with different wallets, right? But if I were, if I had a eCash wallet that was in the App Store or any other type of wallet like that, I would definitely want to learn more, or I'd probably want to go educate the Google Play Store folks on all these nuances and assure them that, my category of wallet is also acceptable and should be not outright banned from the App Store or the Play Store. And also wouldn't have to become an MSP. Although some of those get into gray area, right? So
was the initial announcement targeting self-custody cryptocurrency wallets, or was it more like a broad thing that didn't appropriately carve out?
The latter. It said cryptocurrency wallets.
Okay.
Exchanges and wallets.
So they were probably trying to create a new policy for exchanges, like entities that really are money transmitters, and they sort of inadvertently...
I think the reality is there's a bunch of fraud in app stores, right? In general, certainly around wallets. Because if I'm a criminal and want to steal money, what better way than like put a app in the store that's a wallet that looks legitimate, or steal someone else's like brand, trick a bunch of people, steal all their money. You know, so it's right. I the Wallet Scrutiny Project that Spiral funds finds a lot of these apps. So I think it's quite common. So I suspect Google Play Store is just responding to that. Like I suspect that they are like well-intentioned, trying to eliminate the fraud. They probably do not understand all the nuances for all these different types of wallets and trust levels. And maybe just like, you know, so knee-jerk said, oh, well, you got to be regulated.
Right.
Then you're good. Not regulated, then you're not good. So they've made an improvement, but there's still some gray area. But I think the bigger issue, which we don't have, maybe a bigger topic for another day, is just like the power of two stores and how they could just like completely change an industry. Like imagine if all the wallets were banned. Then an Apple, you'd be totally screwed unless you jailbreak your phone. And then an Android, everyone would have to adapt to sideloading APKs, which isn't that hard, but it certainly adds friction to the experience.
Well, so this to me is the big thing, right? So like, it's not the first time we've gone through this. There've been wallet, scares in the past. All the Nostradamus, right? When Will can get Domus in the App Store. Like, to me, you hit the nail on the head. Like, the danger here is the arbitrary and capricious nature, or just the arbitrary nature of any two companies having complete control over whatever people can use over their phone. Like, that's crazy. And to me, the thing that I keep coming back with, I think the big question here is, if we continue down the path we're currently on, and your only option is Apple or Play Store, then it seems to me like it's a question of when, not if, like something really bad happens, whether it's a government directed attack or it's something that's kind of accidental, or it's just like we were saying, like, it's like we talked about last week, because the internet becomes KYC and it's probably good intention, probably maybe. And all of a sudden it's like, as Will put very eloquently on Domus, all of a sudden you have to scan your eyeball and your anus to be able to access the internet, and here we are, right? And so like I will say each and every one of these events, I remember a million from Primal said this a couple maybe a year ago, we were asking like, hey, like, should we capitalize more on everything that's happening in Brazil when they were cracking down? He's like, look guys, the rug pulls are just going to keep happening, keep accelerating. Everyone is a new chance for Nostra to kind of, hopefully it'll be a little bit better, a little bit more powerful, to kind of reassert itself. I think, and even in something else you said, Steve, even in your preamble of that, you made the point, you're like, yeah, we think Google's fixed it, but it's from some Google account I've never heard of. Same thing. How the hell do we even know on the platforms, or decentralized media platforms, that Google is actually the one saying this, right? So this made me, increasingly bullish on things like Nostra. I'm glad that something like Zap Store still around. I still can't use it because it's only for, I guess, sideloaded on Android. But I'm glad that that's still going, and more of these, I think every Nostra app, or the majority of the Nostra apps that most people use right now, are available on Zap Store. Zap Store, for those who don't know, you sign with your Nostra keys, your private keys. When you publish, everything is accessible. You can have customizable algorithms to, feature apps, or decide which ones are frauds or which ones are not. So that's exciting to me.
And it's distributing PWA apps, right? Not native mobile apps?
I think they're doing native for Android. So the ones that you have to use the APK for, though.
Okay.
He was considering PWA, and maybe he's gone more down that route. But I think this is the broader question. And DK, maybe you have a thought, because I know you've thought a lot about PWAs. How the hell do we get out of this duopoly? Like, I love Zap Store. I love Nostr. It's a great start. But like, if the only game in town is either off to like siloed stuff, like, okay, so nerds are going to be able to free themselves. Most people are. Or PWAs, and like, yeah, why haven't PWAs taken off? Like, maybe, and I think there's still an opportunity, but it doesn't seem like it's getting that much traction. The bigger question in my mind is it still possible? And Steve, I know you thought a lot about this. Did you say, fuck it, launch a new phone, new open source operating system to compete head on with Apple and Google? Maybe it looks like a long shot today, but like, if they keep cracking down over time, you can keep having better and freer and more profitable product experiences over there. Is that the long-term answer, or is it something else? Or with AI, are the app stores, you know, potentially about to become irrelevant and no, actually we're going to be looking to the future, and it's really going to be the agent, the assistant that I'm interfacing with, and letting that agent access things freely and forget the old world, let the old world die out. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think I would say the only thing worth spending time on is that last one, because it's so obviously going to happen. And so how can you usher it in a way that makes sense for people? But I think the concept of have another app store with another phone and just kind of replay history, I think rarely makes sense. It's attractive because it's familiar. So we're like, oh, let's do the thing that we're all familiar with and do it more open or more, you know, generous in a way. But I think the main story here is AI. And I think, you know, what I want on my phone really is I want a button like a Siri, but I want to actually work. Right. And I want to be able to just say what I want and like, hey, take a note on thing X. Hey, like drop me into the experience where I'm like navigating that world, or I'm navigating this world and give me directions to a thing. I never actually want to like swipe open the thing, choose a specific app to do a specific function, and then try to like navigate through that app. I just want to like will it into existence as I need it, or sort of conjure it up as I need it. And maybe even will new software into existence as I need it. But those are all things that AI is such a disruptive vector to. So I, you know, it may be that Apple builds this device, maybe that Google or you know, Samsung or somebody else builds this device. Maybe that OpenAI is, you know, claiming to want to do a phone like thing. I think we're at a moment right now where you could really rethink what the device is and then what the OS is and sort of how it accesses the concept of apps. So I think it's very exciting, but I would almost like spend like no energy on trying to like fix the problems of history and spend all of your energy on how do you usher in the new stuff in a way that aligns with the ideals that you want to promote in the world.
So let's talk more about that then. So I agree with you 100%. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on what that form factor might look like. And maybe the sort of payments, the Bitcoin stuff is just plumbing in the background. But if you were to start something, or like where would you even start thinking about what that looks like today? Do you think that the best place is to try and actually create the assistant and in the background create the plumbing that's using the MCP servers that are monetized or something like that for the assistant to be able to access different agents? And how do you make sure, or how do you try and shift or nudge the scale towards open source in that world?
I mean, I think, yeah, I've found the form factor of glasses or maybe the AirPod type, you know, headphones experiences like a really good form factor. I think the thing that I think it really needs is it needs some sort of camera that's really high quality. And I think the Meta glasses, I think, are sort of a good step towards that, but probably not going to be super open. We'll see. But like, I think you need to sort of reinvent form factors. You need connectivity. So how is your connectivity going to work? Is it going to go to AT&T and Verizon towers? Are you going to go to Starlink? Are you going to go somewhere else? Are you going to sort of have MVNOs that abstract those and kind of multi-source them the way like the Google, what's the offering? Is it Fi? So, yeah. But I mean, that it's like an attempt to try to multi-source the actual towers and networks. But I think that, you know, just doing another phone doesn't feel like you can, I don't know, to me, it doesn't feel as attractive as like the idea of will we have something of a new wearable that will help us do that? And then the main interface, the wearable in and out, is mostly through
voice.
Yeah.
And sign language. But okay, so that's all interesting to me. How do you shift towards open? Like, so let's say Meta and Apple are both going to compete. I've heard repeatedly that Tim Cook only cares about competing with Zuck on these glasses, whatever that looks like, fine. So they're just going to go for a closed version. Maybe. You never know with Meta's new take. What does the open version look like then? And how do you, what are the advantages, or how do you make sure you can tap the advantages of a fully open developer ecosystem?
Can I interject really quick with the
please
question?
Yeah.
How many times have either of you seen someone in the wild wearing Apple Vision Pro in 2025?
I don't think it works in the wild. It works like in your house. So you have to be at the person's house.
Well, I had my first experience.
Oh, okay.
In Atlanta. Miles and I went running a couple mornings, and then we went to a Starbucks, and there was a guy in Starbucks sitting there wearing his Vision Pro.
Nice.
And it made me realize I've seen more people in the wild wearing Google Glass in my lifetime than Apple Vision Pro.
Yeah.
Just saying. Anyway, back to your more serious question.
No, and to be clear, I'm not convinced that this is the right form factor. Maybe it is, maybe it's not. Like, I still think there's a world, I don't know if I'll ever wear the glasses, but like, would I like to have like earbuds and I can just talk to my dude? Sure.
Yeah. I mean, maybe just a better set of earphones that have like, and I think if you want open, you need the LLM that basically controls the whole thing to be switchable at least, right? So maybe a default, you know, pairs with, you know, an OpenAI or an Anthropic or Gemini or something. But you could swap it out. Same as like in a browser, you can swap out which search engine you use. Of course, everybody uses the defaults. But I think if you want open, you want to start to move towards that. You can't swap out the App Store on iPhone. You have to use the App Store. You can't use really any alternative. But I think if you can swap it out, that's like one step towards open. But it's hard to have like an open hardware stack that everybody builds to that lets open source software and open choices on everything without some real ideology kind of delivering
that. There was a public company we knew that would ever consider doing something like that.
Yeah. I mean, look at Proto compared to, history.
But what do you think is like, so yes, if you get the right ideological founder, that's awesome. What do you think though is like the right starting point? Like, I mean, one reason to try and do this is because, for example, if you were to access, I don't know, all of the content on something like Nostr or all of the apps that people have developed, now there's, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of Nostr apps out there. Okay. That's interesting because now I don't have to like start from scratch. So maybe that's kind of the way in is my LLM can access all of these other tools that, either ecosystem has, or like some of them will have it, but it'll be super proprietary, like with Apple's or Facebook's. So maybe just like the way to get this started is to have more of our developers developing sort of LLM tools, maybe with monetized with the paid MCP servers. But like with this kind of like vision in mind that eventually there's going to be like one master assistant for every person or company that's going to access these tools.
I mean, I've got one for you, a nice starting point, which is kind of inspired by what you just said. But I'd love to see, I don't know if you've watched much, like I think Anthropic calls them artifacts. I think OpenAI calls it something else. But they basically are little mini software programs that run within kind of the traditional chat interface. So you don't deploy them to a unique URL on the web. You don't, you don't deploy it to an iOS app store app that people download in the traditional way. You just like kind of conjure something up in a chat session, and then the software is there in the session, I think, workable. You know, so it's like almost like a mini app that you can use real time. But I don't know if those live anywhere persistently, or if you can access it later, or if they have data paired with them. Like they're very easy to make, but they're probably kind of like ephemeral, which can be good for some applications. But I wonder if there were ones that got made. Like, where should those be shared? We don't have a common place to share those things. And I bet that sometimes people come up with things and they iterate them and make them better. And they could be useful by millions of people, but we don't have a way to make them available to millions of people. We don't have any kind of like sharing hub or infrastructure. So I could imagine, to me, it feels like Nostr would be a good public place to be able to have those things live, kind of a public app store like thing. But I could almost imagine like a client where you could prompt something into existence in a very lightweight way. You don't have to worry about deploying it to a URL so much on the web, but you deploy it to kind of like a Noster NPub. And then maybe that client or a separate client can kind of pull all of the little mini apps together and surface them in an app store like interface, maybe. But anybody who wants could write a new app store like Noster app that accesses all the same underlying data. So it's not controlled by the sort of app store. It's just discovered, curated.
It's a great idea. I love that. Yeah.
I just wanted to do a time check. We have like 12 or so minutes left, and I do have or 10 minutes left. I have a hard stop. So, because I actually wanted to talk about Kali and the Play Store and BitChat, but I guess we'll have to save that for another episode.
We could always do some of that.
We don't have enough time because
you want to get deeper on the L1s.
Steve is our proprietary L1 maximalist.
We're also not going to get deep on this because we only have 10 minutes, but we will. We should at least touch on the Stripe news and the Circle news, don't you guys think? I mean, super topical.
And you're the Stripe L1 maximalist, Steve. Take it away for us.
So let's see. Well, I think the order of the news, there are rumors that Stripe was working on a new L1 along with Paradigm. Then after that, Circle formally announced a new L1 of their own called Arc. Then I think it was reported more formally that Paradigm is working with Stripe on an L1 called Tempo. So two new layer one blockchains being announced and worked on. I heard a lot of reaction, especially from Bitcoin community, like, my God, why do we need more layer ones? Isn't this 2025? Didn't we learn lessons like forever ago? But I actually, my reaction, number one, generally makes sense to me. And I'll try to explain why briefly. But two, I generally think it's like pretty positive news. My general view, I think Bitcoin is just so different from everything else and sets itself apart, that the other projects and tokens and chains, they all compete with each other. So it's kind of the more the merrier. Kind of like the introduction of Solana put a lot of pressure on Ethereum and stole away a lot of application development and applications and energy and momentum from Ethereum. Right. And I think these other layer ones kind of do similar things. We saw this in the past. CryptoKitties initially launched on Ethereum, and then that company came out with NBA Top Shot, NFTs for NBA games and players and stuff. And they didn't do it on top of Ethereum. They created their own L1 blockchain called Flow. So that was a company that decided, well, we don't need we don't need Ethereum. We don't need what it provides, and we don't need its cost. We're going to optimize for our application, this L1. And I think it's a similar mindset from Stripe and Circle. Obviously, what I'm about to say is all speculation. It's just my read on the situation, but I suspect Stripe's clearly getting into stablecoins in a huge way. They bought Bridge for $1 billion. They bought Privy, which is like a wallet as a service company. So they're making big moves there. And it's pretty clear that they see the future of their payments business transitioning to stablecoins. That seems kind of obvious to anyone paying attention. So I suspect they don't want to be beholden to Coinbase and Base, or they don't want to be beholden to Tether or whoever the leaders right now, or Circle or whatever. If you look at who are the leaders in stablecoins, like those three companies, well, they don't want to be beholden to them. So Stripe has tons of market power because they have a huge business, a huge network. They can just like upgrade their network to use stablecoins on their layer one, right? So I think it makes tremendous sense. And they can also optimize their layer one specifically for stablecoins and for their use cases. So I think
I have one huge clarification question. Are they launching a stablecoin as well as the L1 or just the L1? Or do we know?
We don't know. But
because those to me are two very, very different things. So, I mean, high level, my take on it is this. I think you're going to see a lot of people coming out with their own stable coins. I question, you know, if there's a lot of value in that. We'll see. But like the L1 thing, the thing that just bugs me with this, I hear you. If you have that much marketing power or market power, you can like create kind of king make yourself fine. But like you also could do this whenever with you just, I don't know, create your own private MySQL database. Whenever you're like, we can customize it for a use case. It's just like, there's no nodes, it's us. Or if there are nodes, it's like, I think what frustrates me is even calling all these L1s. It's always been decentralization theater. And it's like to get around like very light regulation or to kind of be like, well, we're not really the company controlling it, but it's always the company controlling it. And so I guess to me, it's just frustrating. It's like, if you're going to launch your own payment rail to compete with, I don't know, Visas and MasterCards of the world and you're coming for them, great, go for it. But like, must we continue to have this kind of like tongue-in-cheek wink at the regulators? It's decentralized. Like, I don't know. That's my frustration.
Well, one thing I don't know too is like, what is the token going to be for this layer one? I think at least one of them reported that the fee for stablecoins is going to be in the same token as maybe it's ARC from Circle. The fees for their layer one will be in USDC. That would actually make sense. I'm not 100% sure on that, but that's probably the case. And I think with Tempo, I don't think it's been announced what the token will be. So it'll be very curious to see, is it a new token? How is it issued? Is there like a huge pre-mine that Paradigm gets and Stripe gets? My guess is yes. It'll be really interesting to see that, you know, that gives Paradigm tremendous financial interest in this. Also having, you know, I've spoken to Patrick Collison before, long time ago, before I worked at Block, to see if Stripe would be interested in creating a Bitcoin initiative, because that would have been something I would have been interested in working on. And he told me that he was interested in finding the next Stellar, because Stellar Lumens, Stripe made a very large investment in that, and it turned out to make them a lot of money.
Yeah. So
he was interested in the next Stellar Lumens, and that's when I mean, I have great respect for him as an entrepreneur and what he's done with Stripe, but I didn't have a lot of respect for his views on Bitcoin, at least. And I knew that wasn't like the right opportunity for me. So it'll be really interesting to see what they do around the token and how much of they view that as like a business opportunity versus just like trying to create something efficient. And then that might, the more they think it's a financial opportunity, the more it answers why it's not just a database, right?
Yeah. So that I mean, either way, it's like sketchy to me, to be very frank. Like if they're trying to create their own rail to somehow compete with Visa and MasterCard and all that, then it's like, I mean, okay, maybe you could do that because you have enough, you know, merchants on board. But again, this is the whole problem Bitcoin tries to solve, is what you just said, protocols. Protocols are hard to get network effects around.
But I don't
think it's literally... Yeah.
Sorry. Go ahead.
No. But if it's also what you're saying, they're just gonna, you know, pump and dump retail again. I don't know, man. Like I've just lost a lot of respect.
What if we were to flip it though? I'm just curious, like, because this has been sort of a question in my mind for a long time. Is we recognize that stablecoins have product market fit and people want to use them, and we don't believe that any of the underlying kind of L1 infrastructure is really worthwhile or really decentralized or any of that, and so. A question I would have is, if you were, let's say you were Patrick Collison, or you did have sort of the belief set around kind of how Bitcoin, you know, the specialness of Bitcoin and sort of the unspecialness of the L1s and the non-decentralization of it, like, do you have a good proposal for how you would, say, transition Stripe's business to some sort of a stablecoin rail that has like competes with Visa but doesn't necessarily try to launch a new L1 and sort of just go for that kind of, well, cash grab.
You could adopt USDC on Base and partner with Coinbase. You could partner with Lightning Labs or Lightspark. Each of those companies have new platforms, Taproot Assets and Spark, in which you can issue stable coins. I don't know what the future holds for either. I guess it's been announced that Tether's working on Tether on Taproot Assets. Whether Tether's going to, it's going to work on Spark or if USDC is.
I think they announced just yesterday or the day before that Spark. I'll have to look it up.
I don't think so. They announced the wallet development kit.
Yeah, no, that's right.
I don't think they announced an issuance. But anyway, put simply, there are many options that Stripe could do, but I think I think it's very reasonable for Stripe not to choose any of those and build their own L1 because it gives them more control. It gives them more control over customer experience, and it gives them more control over business models and financials. Even if they're, let's just set aside whether they're going to have a token and try to profit off that. Let's just assume they're not. Then what I just said holds true. I think it makes perfect business sense. They don't care about Bitcoin and decentralization and freedom money. That's not their. Sure. Yeah, I'm speculating, but I've seen no evidence they care about any of that.
Right.
So and what they don't need to. I mean, like it's not. Their shareholders aren't demanding that they do that. So
the question I come back to then, though, even for them and Coinbase with Base is like, okay, that's cool. I get it. You only want to maximize profits for your customers. Fine. Why do you need one of these quote unquote L1s or a blockchain or whatever it is? Like, why not just, because it's regulatory arbitrage or regulatory theater.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought I just answered it. It gives them more control over customer experience. It gives them more control over business models and financial future.
But that's not my point. The difference between that and just saying, hey guys, like Stripe has a private database. It's completely ours. We're
right. Okay. Like it's regulatory arbitrage.
Serious. Like, are they that dumb?
we don't know what their strategy is, but they probably will want adoption of their new layer one beyond themselves.
Right.
Because A, it helps strengthen the regulatory angle, but B, it just grows their power. Like if everyone, just like Coinbase wants Base, everyone to use Base. Lightspark wants everyone to use Spark. Lightning Labs wants everyone to use Taproot. Everyone has their like platform. Everyone wants to grow their platform.
Of course.
So Stripe's just entering the platform race, right? And they have a massive set of assets, and it's still early days. So it makes total sense to me that they're doing this. And then with Circle, they introduced Arc. It might be for very different reasons because they have a very different business. They issue a stablecoin. They're the number two position. I'm sure they have their, a strategy to become number one and become dominant. And looks like they've concluded that creating a layer one blockchain that is optimized for USDC is part of that strategy. And just speaking with some folks on what they speculate this could be is like from Circle's viewpoint that they might be challenging like FedNow or other types of like real time traditional TradFi settlement systems with Arc. So I know, lots of unknowns around both these, but again, like I guess to me it seems kind of obvious why both companies are doing this. I don't find it outlandish at all. I think it makes good business sense.
I totally understand why they're doing it. I wish we could stop with the theater, but I get your point. Maybe they'll get adoption and somehow, it will become decentralized.
Why do you say so a lot of cryptocurrency projects, I would agree, like theater, but like I absolutely could imagine 10 years from now, Tempo being like heavily used, like trillions of dollars
on used, either for Arc sure
or Tempo, trillions of dollars on either of those. I could totally imagine.
I can totally imagine that too. So, well, and two things there. One, the question that I would have is like, who's actually running the nodes, or like, who are the actual participants? And
who cares?
Well, that's my point. Like, then let's call it what it is. Like, hey guys, I'm Stripe. I'm the biggest mafia in town. Use my MySQL database and pay my fee, or you're completely shut out of the economy. Like, it's fine. It's cool. Like, it's in the right to do it. It's not a blockchain or decentralized.
Isn't that how Visa works?
Well, Visa is owned.
This conversation is like framed as like competing with Bitcoin in some neutral system. And I don't think that's their goal. They're not trying to do that.
Agreed.
They're trying to like become Visa.
I think Max is pointing out that they are, that Visa is not claiming to be decentralized. They're not claiming to need an L1 for their business. They actually just run their business on a SQL database.
Can you point me to where they claim decentralization is?
They say a new L1 blockchain. So far, that has meant blockchain is decentralized versus I run my own database. If they change the terminology, which is kind of steadily happened over time. Well, I mean, would you agree that there's any difference between a blockchain with one person running it and just a database?
We have a comment saying, rest in peace, my heart stop. And that is correct.
Yeah.
But
all right. Well, we've got more to talk about.
But I just think it's semantics.
I don't understand this implication that, like, first of all, we know that there's a wide range of actual decentralization between blockchains, but I also didn't know that blockchain. We also know
what's the point of a blockchain.
Dyno.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. This has been my point all along.
We know Dyno is a thing, right? Decentralized name only. Anyway.
The only point to need of a blockchain is decentralization. If you don't have it, I think it's theater. I think it's great to get around regulation, but it's just frustrating. That's all I'm saying. It's smart from their end. They're probably going to have a lot of usage. And even if they do, then there's another opportunity, which is who's going to market make between their chain and Bitcoin, which is the internet. Hopefully, the internet ends up winning fast enough that they're forced to join forces with us. That's what
I'm sure. Happens. Well, they bought Bridge, right? So Bridge will bridge between all these different tokens and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
But not Bitcoin yet. Still, critically. One day.
Okay.
One day.
We will resurrect Steve's hard stop. Bring it back from the dead. Thanks, guys.
From the beef tallow.
Great topic, though.
Yes.
Yeah. We'll definitely have to talk about stable coins more, and we'll talk about Play Store and who has the right to put an open source app in the Play Store. I think it's a fascinating question. We'll talk about that in a future episode.
Great.
Till next time.
Thanks, guys.
All right.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.